Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go! Let's go! Yeah!
You're listening to the best of the Patriots. A weekly mix of WEEI's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Frustrating plays in the second half yesterday, Fitzy. You had... The Drake May red zone interception, you had the Ramondre Stevenson fumble, you had the backwards pass from May to Stevenson that led to a Bills touchdown that made it a two-score game. You had Mayo electing to punt with 8 minutes to go down 10 after going for a fake punt earlier in the game when the Patriots started very well. So a lot to get into here. With about 2 hours to go on a Patriots Monday, we're scheduled to be joined by Christian Gonzalez about a half an hour from now with all your phone calls again at 617-779-7937. Just to recap, who do you blame on that specific play there? You have May, you have Stevenson, you have Van Pelt, you have DeMondre Jacobs. Who do you blame for that?
I mean, look, everyone gets a slice of the pie, right? Some people get... We'll say we'll divide it up into eight pieces like a pizza. Some people get three slices, some people get one, some people get two. I'm giving three slices to Van Pelt, two to May, two to Ramondre, and one to Jacobs.
Okay.
Because Jacobs is the three-legged dog that I can't make fun of anymore. He just, like that, he can only do what he can do.
So even though he maybe made the biggest mistake on the play just because of he's so bad, you're going to give him an excuse.
It's just not fun to talk about how bad the offensive line is anymore because none of them are cut out to be starters in the NFL. Like, maybe Mike Onwenu. Like, that's it. Otherwise, the other four may not see a significant snap next year, save for injury, in the National
Football League.
And certainly not in New York. I'd be fine if they literally blew out the entire room.
Yeah.
The whole room.
Including Onwenu.
Fine.
That's friend of the show, Mike Onwenu, there. How dare you, Fitzy. But no, I would be totally, I'm with you. I would be fine. You can move on from the entire offensive line. No offense to good friend of the show, Mike Onwenu. Didn't even need him re-signed last offseason. And so I'm with you on that. And you know how you know it's bad for the O-line? Not just that Drake May was running for his life. Literally every week, Jerod Mayo gets asked this. People talk about it. We get phone calls about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do you think this is the week Cole Strange is back? And yeah, what if they put in Caden Wallace at right tackle? Like, these are real discussions every week. Like, those things would actually help.
Right. But I ask you this. We mentioned it at the top of the show, and it was one of the things that was driving me crazy when I was watching the game. It felt like every time May dropped back more than three steps to pass, there were at least two red Pat the Patriot doubling as Buffalo Bills jerseys in the backfield. Like, they had free run.
Do you think they looked up and they were like, oh, those are our guys we're trying to block? You think that's what threw them off yesterday?
It's a bunch of non-contact jerseys coming at me right now. What the hell, man? Yeah, I thought those uniforms they look nice. They just belong in New England, not in Buffalo.
It was confusing. I got back for the game a touch late yesterday. The Jones family was at the Grinch.
It was
wonderful. I'll tell you, not to spoil anything, but there's one moment. It's a very sophomoric potty humor. But there was one moment. No. That got a big pop from all the 6-year-olds in the crowd. Mm-hmm. I don't want to spoil anything, but it was a good showing. But my point is, by the time I got back, I was a touch late to the game. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, the uniforms threw me. I was like, wait a minute, who has the ball? What am I watching? First of all, the score is wrong. The Patriots are winning. And second of all, like, what are these uniforms all about? So you can jump in on this, 617-779-7937. We'll get into whether or not Jerod Mayo did enough to save his job. Nick is waiting patiently in Weymouth, though, on Alex Van Pelt. Go ahead, Nick.
Hi, comment on a couple plays you talked about. On the play in the end zone, the interception, and oh, by the way, they described it as incidental contact. Who was that, Austin Cooper there? He didn't have much awareness, but the guy clearly did trip him, not intentionally. That should have been a penalty. When they say incidental contact, that means blown call. Anyways, it was a stupid pattern to begin with. You had three guys congested in that area. I wouldn't mind, but they got a lot of decent linebackers in Buffalo and cornerbacks. Okay, highly intelligently thought about. Okay, They should have bet. You saw how they played, a good balancing of running.
Yeah, Nick, can I just jump in for a moment? Hang on. My call screen says Van Pelt has to go. Is that where you're going with this?
Well, it says what?
Van Pelt has to go?
Yeah, that's where I'm going.
Okay, well,
who's calling the plays?
That
other play, the swing pass that turned into a touchdown. Really? You're going to do that against Greg Russo, who's going to play it right on the line of scrimmage? He was there all over that thing. I'd say they practiced that play probably three times in the preseason. It wasn't poorly coached to throw a pass. You have to lead the guy. You can't throw the pass. Yes, he has to go.
Okay,
if you want to beat that.
So I'm not necessarily against Van Pelt going. I'm with you, Fitzy, earlier. He would be lower on my priority list. So we've done this periodically. We've asked Curran about it. Keith is big on this question. Okay. You're a Mount Rushmore of fireable Patriots coaches, front office types. Elliot Wolf, Jerod Mayo, Alex Van Pelt, DeMarcus Covington. Who should be safest and who should be on the hottest of hot seats?
Elliot Wolf should probably be on the hottest of hot seats because your free agent class was by and large a whiff and or including, look, yeah, there should be a place for him on the line, but the best offensive lineman free agent who just happened to be on your team, who you paid last year $19 million a season, hasn't performed like it. And then this draft class, I mean, cataclysmic whiff. And I like Elliot Wolf. I had some confidence in the Wolf man, the Wolf of Ball Street heading into the season. I feel like I've been duped. And it does make you wonder this, Jones, how much, because Elliot Wolf and Matt Groh were working behind the scenes for the last couple of years with Belichick and whoever else was in the gridiron draft player development brain trust, how much of a say did they have in some of the draft picks that didn't pan out over the last couple of years?
So a lot. And this is not to... It's not Fitzy to let Bill off the hook, because Bill obviously had struggles drafting, but it's just to assign some blame to the guys who are still here. And this is what I think is the smoking gun. Tyquan Thornton was on the roster for so long. If they had no say in Tyquan Thornton, the second Bill's gone, you cut him in training camp. That guy was on the roster for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that tells you those two guys, or at least Wolf and probably Groh as well, liked him, believed in that pick, were mm-hmm. on board with that pick. So it's not to let Bill off the hook. I think Bill liked all these guys too. It's just to say, I think these two are on board with it as well. And I think Thornton's the one that jumps out to me as the obvious second guess that hung around for too long.
Didn't Matt Groh say a couple of years ago, like, if you want to get fast, you draft fast
Correct.
Players.
Yes.
Yeah. So they drafted a guy who they believed was fast. He is fast. But you know what I'll do? I'll do that. Let's play this game. Name a skinny, fast Baylor receiver that has worked out in the NFL over the last 30 years. I'll hang up and take your call offline.
Yeah, thanks. You know what? There was one. Who was the first round pick out of Baylor? There was Corey
Justin Blackmon.
Oh,
he was good for a year.
I like Corey. No. Blackmon was from.
So he was from Baylor,
Oklahoma State.
No, yeah, he was. He was Oklahoma State. You're
fact
right.
Check,
he was,
fact
he
check
was
me on that. I like Corey Coleman. I was a big Corey Coleman guy when he came out of Baylor, and that's
Whiff.
One. That's one where I said, okay, maybe I need to rethink this. This
Denzel Mims with the Jets.
Oh yeah,
none of them
good
were,
one.
Not they're all tall, thin, fast, and they stink in the NFL. Meanwhile, the human facsimile of Tyquan Thornton, Xavier Worthy, who I thought was just too frail to make it in the NFL, scored his seventh touchdown of his rookie season on Saturday against Houston for the Chiefs.
Yeah, the Patriots, as you said earlier, and many have pointed out as well, they could have just sat there and taken Ladd McConkey, and instead they reached for Jalen Polk, who, by the way, it's not just that he can't play. The Patriots watched Washington tape. They watched mm-hmm. Washington tape. Maybe they really liked Odunze. They couldn't get him unless they took him instead of May, and I prefer Drake May to Rome Odunze. But they
or
watched
McMillan.
The tape.
Yeah.
Thank you. And they said, you know who we like? This Jalen Polk character. Not McMillan, who scored again last night and was a third-round pick, and the text line was pointing that out earlier. They got the worst out of three Washington receivers. Never mind just bad guys in the draft and whiffed on a receiver. They got the one guy at Washington who couldn't play in this year's draft.
And I have spoken at the stadium with reporters who have spent a lot of time around Polk, and they all attest to him being a high-quality person, good character. Like, it's not like, this will make it easier to hate on him because he's a jerk. Like, nope, good kid, smart guy, just got, he is lost in trying to figure out his role on this team. He's another example, Jones, of they're just going to run the whole damn operation back.
What, do you got a train station? What is it? What do you got? Cell station ready to leave the city?
We're going to make the 12:15. We'll have to get Jones to break on time.
That's never happening.
Grab the bags. Yeah, like Jalen Polk, like how poorly his season is going right now is exactly how the coaching staff season is going. Like, you can't cut bait on him after 1 year and say he joins the long growing list of Patriot flame out second round wide receiver picks. He's going to get another year, even though he looks to be a complete loss right now. Just like all these coaches, like, well, we kind of screwed you guys by giving you no talent. I mean, we gave you Polk, and Polk got these coaches. So everyone's going to get a chance to run it back next season just with some new linemen and a couple of fancy draft picks. So get fired up, fans.
617-779-7937. Text line is buzzing with Josh Gordon. That's a Baylor wide receiver that worked out. But that was a while ago. And
he did, but like he had his own set of issues. Was a disaster.
Yeah, exactly.
Wish that maybe the Crafts would come out and say, hey, we've had the discussion. Gerard's good to go next year.
I don't know what that would do. It doesn't matter. Like, to
shut
me,
us up.
No, I mean, look, you guys are going to you got to fill up the airwaves somehow. You're right. You know what I mean? So it's fine. Like, for me and for the team, like, we're pushing forward and we're getting ready for the Chargers. You know, look, we just have to continue to get better there. It's about the process, and that's what we're doing.
Gerard Mayo this morning with Courtney Cox, Jermaine Wiggins, Razor Raycroft, and to my surprise, Wiggy's son.
Yes.
Who is Jaden? Is that it?
I don't know.
Jaden? Yeah, okay. Jaden Wiggins was in the room as well.
Nepotism.
Now, normally, I got the show going on my YouTube stream. I have YouTube built into my TV, you know, so I call it up and start watching it at home. But today, I had to take George over to my mother-in-law, so I'm driving around there while they're interviewing Gerard Mayo, and they're all asking their questions, and then all of a sudden, I hear this voice go, hey, I got a question, and I was like, wow, Curtis really sounds different this morning. I wonder what that is. And it was Jaden Wiggins. Yeah. He had a question. It was a good question about the offseason and how he's preparing for that yet, or, you know, these last two games and how you sort of balance all of that. And, yeah, he was in here. He was sitting right here.
Yep.
And he had a question for Mayo, and I thought that was a pretty good question. Now, that wasn't it, obviously. That was Courtney who asked that one there. And I thought that was his most interesting answer of the day. There were some answers that he had yesterday that were very brief. I think we all agree that was, Coach Stacey speaking there. Or maybe Mayo's just had enough of having to come in here every Monday and walk all that stuff back. So you could tell there was a definite shift in the way he was answering questions post-game. And I think that the answer to that question here, Curtis wasn't here, Greg wasn't there, and, you know, I think that Courtney did a very nice job of sort of asking the tough questions, because they did lose the game, and he was a little more chipper generally than he is after some of these losses. That was an interesting answer. Would you feel better if the Crafts came out and spoke in your support? Well, I don't know if that would do anything.
Right.
I don't know what the point of that would be. And I heard that, and I was like, oh, okay, well, I wonder what he knows, or I wonder what he thinks he knows, or I wonder what he's been told that either makes him think that that's not necessary or that that's not coming, right? Like, because it's one of those two things. He didn't really specify, and he's not going to, I don't think. But he's either not worried about it because he's been told something, or he is worried about it and doesn't, you know, think that them coming out and saying something would really mean anything at all.
Yeah, I think it's the he's not worried about it part, because I think he's been talking for weeks, maybe months, about how much better he'll be in his second season and the year two jump for coach, just like it can be for a player. Mm-hmm. I know he said it with the sit down with Curran during the bye week, but he's definitely alluded to things he's learning and how he can put them to use next year.
Yep.
And I also think from just a normal perspective, it's rare to get fired after 1 year.
Yeah.
Becoming less rare in maybe the modern NFL, but unless you're a real train wreck, and I don't think he probably thinks he's a train wreck. Now, others can view it differently. Others may view him as a train wreck.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he thinks what he has done has been first-year fireable if you hired me and thought I was a leader of men in all those things. So I actually thought the most interesting answer was Wiggy's kid's answer, which elicited, you got to see which players you want to have here next year and which coaches. What's that now? So you're already thinking about some of these coaches. Some of these coaches he knows are absolutely dead men walking.
Yeah.
Dead. They have two games left, and they're going to be let go. And I don't know.
The head strength and conditioning coach, you think?
No, I think the
you
head
think he'll be okay?
I think he'll be okay. I mean, they haven't.
That's Gerard Mayo's brother, by the way.
Yeah,
Deron,
who was hired by Bill Belichick. We might get into that later.
Okay.
They haven't had a ton of injuries, right?
Mm-mm.
I mean, you had the weird injury, the Barmore injury. Yeah, I've had a couple, but
I don't call that an injury. But yeah, I mean,
yeah,
it's
health
more
issue.
Of a condition. Yeah,
Daron Mayo was not going to change blood clots in Christian Barmore. So I don't feel like you have this obvious, oh my God, hellacious injury report. The strength and conditioning program must stink. He's got to go. No, I think the guys that are most in the crosshairs, honestly, I think DeMarcus Covington might be at the top of the list now, and offensive assistants. We've talked about it. The wide receivers coach, Scott Turner, is a weird one because I don't think the line is good.
Mm-hmm.
I think the talent is terrible.
Yeah.
I think it's a practice squad caliber talent. So is that Scott Turner's fault? Has he maximized? Maybe none of these guys are worthy of being on an NFL field, and he's gotten the most out of them because it hasn't been train wreck after train wreck. They've actually run the ball relatively well most of the second half of the season. And I did think yesterday was the most pressure and hits that Mayo was like. There's been a lot of, like, it felt like Jacoby Brissett early in the year.
It did. And in the second half, in the third, late third, early fourth quarter in particular, when they just kept blitzing, there was at least two free rushers
every
almost
time.
Every single snap.
And he had to either run backwards or sideways or backwards and sideways for his life.
Now, I don't know if that's necessarily the offensive line. You know, if there's blitzers and they're not sending enough guys out there to stay in chip or block or whatever, then, you know, that could be the problem too. But
Gibson had
it was happening. Gibson had
beautiful.
One. Where it was like he was stopping a locomotive coming at him. And that was, I saw that and thought, all right, that little guy's tough.
that was his job.
Big block right there.
Especially for a former wide receiver.
Yeah.
Guy that people want to say is basically a wide receiver who plays running back. Well, that was a big boy running back pass pro.
Yeah, it certainly was. Jerod Mayo, I think, is probably not too concerned about it either. And I don't know if he had an official conversation with anybody where they assured him of anything, but the reporting and the talk about it from Rossini and from Breer and from Curran and everybody else was, this is not really up for discussion unless things are unwatchable this weekend and the next two weekends. And if it's that bad for the next 3 weeks and it's a total free fall, I think was the word that got used, then you might see, then they have the right to change their mind. That wasn't a free fall game. It just wasn't. It was it was a game that they had a lead in.
Upset
which
alert.
No one was expecting. It was an upset alert. They ended up blowing it, obviously. But, I mean, that I think is, if they were looking for reasons, and we saw this, Rossini said this, the Crafts are looking for reasons not to get rid of them.
Welcome back to the Greg Hill Show. Greg out, Curtis is out, so it's Wiggy and the Woman with Razor, and we are now joined by Jerod Mayo, and Jerod Mayo's interview
is Razor and Jaden.
Yeah, and Jaden. Jaden is being a bit shy. He's talked a little bit, but I don't want to put him on the spot anymore because I've asked too many questions. But this interview is brought to you by Northeast Men's Health, the experts in treating men's sexual health with 5 New England offices or at northeastmenshealth.com. It's also brought to you by Land Rover of Norwood and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name you know when your drains won't flow, and by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. I always feel bad for Greg when he's doing that read because it is awkward.
Yeah.
It's like you're sitting here, there's a million different sponsors, but
you got to pay the bills.
Yeah, you do. Loss yesterday, but not a terrible one. We treat it like a moral victory Monday. I'm sure you don't, but how is your overall feeling with how the guys played?
You know, having an opportunity to go back and watch the film, I thought the guys really came out and started fast, you know, in a hostile environment. That's not an easy place to play offensively and defensively in that first quarter. It was one of the best quarters we've had all year. Unfortunately, we weren't able to carry that over into the second half, but I thought the guys played hard, and I mean, you hit it on the head. There are no moral victories, but we'll learn from this and correct it and try to get better going forward.
A big question that we had last week, we talked about it with you last Monday, and then I know AVP was asked about it, and he touched on it, but design run plays for Drake and the lack thereof. He basically, I don't want to quote him incorrectly, but said that the reason in which maybe there aren't many or aren't at all is that they don't want to put Drake in a situation where he could get injured at the end of this season. That was a difference yesterday that we saw. There were some design run plays for him. What was the change?
Yeah, to me, we're trying to win a football game. To us, we all are trying to win a football game, coaches and players included, and we're always going to do what's best for the team, and that was what was best for the team yesterday, and he used his legs and made a couple plays.
Jerod, you talked about the tale of two halves. First half, offensively, you were able to move the ball well. What do you think was the biggest issue in the second half? I know, obviously, turnovers were a huge part of losing that football game, but what do you think were the biggest issues for you not being able to sustain that success in the second half, especially when it came to offense and maybe moving the football?
Look, when we talk about complementary football, that's all three phases. And, you know, our best defense in the first quarter was our offense going out there having extended drives. Like, that was against a team like this. And anytime you get an MVP caliber type of player and Josh Allen on the sideline for that, you know, that amount of time, it's good for us. You know, in saying that, you know, this game came down to two things. It came down to us turning the ball over. It came down to us not being able to stop the run. I mean, that's, if you boil everything down, decisions made, do this, do that, it was those two things that really hurt us the most.
Can you fix those two things for Saturday afternoon? Were there fixable moments, or is it a product of just the build up and a football play?
They're definitely fixable. And, you know, what this game comes down to is just consistency. You know, consecutive six-second plays, play after play after play after play, being consistent, and all 11 guys being on the same page. So to answer your question, yes.
Jelani Tavai talked to us on Friday and said that he felt like it was a good week of practice, felt like the defense was clicking. They knew what they needed to do going into this one. Started off strong, kind of fell off in the second half. What do you think it is about that second half of games where your guys maybe aren't fully executing?
Well, you know, I guess it depends on what game you watch as far as second half play is concerned. You know, for me, the players, they go out there every single play and try to do what they think is right. And so I have no gripe against that. I would just say, just on a going back to consistency, we just have to, in all three phases, go out there and do and run the plays. I mean, that's what it comes down to. I have to coach better, and we just have to get in that win column. I think, you know, winning heals all.
Gerard, this game is all about confidence. Your team was able to do something that not many teams can say that they do, which hold the Buffalo Bills to under 30, basically frustrated Josh Allen through the majority of the game, limit him in what he was able to do. How can you, even though it's a loss, how can you take some of that, especially defensively, and say, okay, we were able to do this against a really good offense. I was going to work on the run, but to build off of some of that confidence kind of moving forward in these last two games.
Yeah, it's huge. You know, I mean, that's what being a professional is all about. It's about taking the good out of the last game, and this is why we do those self-scouts, take the good out of the last game and move forward. You know, I was so proud of the way those guys did contain. Going back to your question, they did a great job, for the most part, keeping Josh Allen in the pocket. Now, did he get outside? Absolutely, at times. I thought the guys in the back end covered well, but we have to carry that over. We have a huge challenge in front of us here on Saturday.
What does the week look like? Does it change with the holiday, with the Saturday afternoon? I was asking Wiggy earlier just kind of what the Sunday to Saturday schedule, days off-wise, and then getting ready for the Chargers.
Yeah, I mean, look, and I would say it's also a Saturday game, which is always tough. If it was a Sunday game, I mean, it's a little bit different. Yeah. But, look, we'll put extra work in today. We'll put extra work in tomorrow. The guys will have a chance to spend time with their families on Wednesday.
Got it.
And then really you just continue to make up that time on Thursday and Friday, and the guys understand that, and the captains, they were all for it, and that's what we're going to do.
We've been talking about the different reports that have been coming out, whether it's, you know, the Crafts have told you that you are good to go for next season. I know that you answered that question with the media last week saying, you know, I don't know where these reports are coming out from. Then Diana Russini said, you know, three games left of the season. The Crafts want to see close games, but they feel like he is the future. Is that a distraction for your team? Are you proud of how they've handled it? And it must be annoying for you that that is a narrative that your guys have to answer to.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not, I mean, you said it, and I agree with you. It's just annoying that
you
the
said
player,
it, not me.
No, we're not going. We're not going.
We're not going back.
We are not.
We are not going
back. Down that road. Are we all clear? Yeah. Are we all clear?
Ultimately, you said it, not me. We're not going down that road.
Ultimately, every decision in football it starts and ends with me. Going back to your question was what now? Because now you threw me off my game.
I just feel like it must be annoying.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Look, the guys, they handle it the way they handle it. I never tell them what to say. And to me, it's about, you know, the consistency and the messaging within the building, and that's what it's all about. I can't control, you know, what's being reported. I can't control, you know, there are things I just can't control, but what I can control is my attitude and the way I approach every single week, the way I approach all the players, you know, trying to get them better.
Well, because Drake May, when he was asked about it after the game, he said basically, I think the reports are BS, and, you know, we support Gerard, we support AVP, but the look on his face, the way he was grabbing the back of his neck, it's like, when are we going to stop this narrative over and over again, week after week? Do you wish that maybe the Crafts would come out and say, hey, we've had the discussion, Gerard's good to go next year?
Again, like, I don't know what that would do. It doesn't matter. Like, to
shut
me,
us up.
No, I mean, look, you guys are going to, you got to fill up the airwaves somehow.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's fine. Like, for me and for the team, like, we're pushing forward and we're getting ready for the Chargers. You know, look, we just have to continue to get better. It's about the process, and that's what we're doing. Obviously, no one's excited, fans, coaches, players, anyone. No one's excited about our record. But what we have to do is just go back to the drawing board every single week and continue to get better on a down after down basis, day after day basis.
Well, one of the things that, you know, you kind of look at is when you, like you said, you're able to self-scout and kind of self-evaluate with these next two games. I feel like you guys put yourself in a position where, you know, you went into Buffalo and it was a game you could have won. What do you have to do, especially starting with the Chargers? Like, what do you have to do as a team to say, okay, we can win these games and we can play with these teams moving forward, especially coming up against the Chargers on Saturday?
It's about putting two halves of football together. I mean, look, we go back and how many one-score games have we had throughout the season and just weren't able to finish? It's about putting four quarters of good complementary football together, and that's what we plan to do on Saturday.
Gerard, I got a question.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah. Boy, way to step in. I love it.
You see?
Good.
I'm just wondering, like, how the season's went. Like, what is your thought process going into next season? And, like, what are you thinking towards? What are you thinking now? Like, I know you got the Chargers coming up Saturday, but what are you thinking after the season and whatnot during the offseason?
Yeah, I would say, you know, we try. That's a good question, by the way.
Yes.
Well, training them up. Training them up. Proud dad. Proud dad. Proud dad. Look, I try to stay as present as possible with the reality. But the reality is you always have to look out the front windshield when you're trying to build a team. You know, for me, you know, after we get through the season, there are a lot of things, a lot of checklists that you have to go through. You know, what players you want to keep around, what coaches you want to keep around here, how the process of the season, like what I did right, what I did wrong. I have to put a mirror in front of my face, and it starts with me, you know, putting a mirror in front of my face and really just going through the things that I have to get better at going forward. And then look, everything that we've done this year, you know, from a process standpoint, I mean, some of it's been good, some of it's been bad, but that is part of being, you know, in your first year, whether your first year in whatever, first year you want to be a journalist, first year, like, it's a learning experience. And you, but the most important thing is to be able to reflect and be honest with yourself, you know, when you didn't do things the right way or when you did it the wrong way.
I have a question about the kickoffs. And the kids were debating it on the couch last night watching the game. Has it taken out some of the strategy on special teams? And do you like the new kickoffs?
You know, for me, you know, I'm just a huge fan of trying to kick it out the back of the end zone. What I will say is as the weather starts to change, even though you want to kick it out the back of the end zone, as it gets cold, the ball does not carry as far. And so I think as we go through this season and the cold weather games continue to pop up, you're going to see a lot more returns coming up here soon.
When it comes to Ramondre, another game where he looked great in the beginning, but, you know, holding on to the football, what's been the issue there, you think?
Yeah, I mean, everyone is different. Every one of those fumbles has really been different, but it's a mentality, and we continue to, you know, reiterate to the whole team, whoever has the ball, even the defensive players, if they get an interception or something like that, you know, when you carry the ball, you're carrying the fortunes of the rest of the team. And we just have to, you know, we have to get better. And I would say, look, Ramondre understands that more than anyone else. He understands that he has to protect the football. And so, you know, we got to get better in practice and just show up in the game.
Same thing with penalties. All the penalties are different. You know, yesterday Hunter Henry has another holding penalty. What do you see there?
Yeah, I don't really put that holding penalty, you know, on Hunter per se. I think Drake, as he watches the film, he would see that if he just went downhill, it wouldn't be a holding. That same position that Hunter was in is this exact same position on stretch run plays that offensive tackles are in.
Mm-hmm.
And when, you know, they think the running back's going to cut back, but he continues. Yeah, you probably have some holding penalties.
Oh, yeah.
He continues to go outside, and now you're like, oh, shoot.
Yeah, like,
and it's that slight tug, and, you know, they call it.
Tell him, no, go inside.
That's right.
I can't help you.
That's right.
When you look at this game and you look at like kind of where your team is, and the thing that, you know, maybe you take away as a positive thing is when you have your guys, whether it's Drake May, whether it's Hunter Henry, there's been a couple guys on defense talking about the respect that they have for you as a coach, and they love you as a coach. And like you said, it's going to be very difficult for somebody in their first year because there's going to be the ups and downs. But what does it mean when your players come out publicly, not necessarily that they have to defend you, but just to know, like, that's the sentiment in the locker room, is that your players really, you know, they got your back.
I mean, look, I appreciate it. And I've said this before, like, this game is all about relationships. And again, you know, as we continue to build, like, you know, we're going to do it together. You know, you think about it, even with the quarterback, like, we're growing up together. This is his rookie year, and I fully anticipate us, you know, getting better as a team going forward.
There was a moment in the game, I don't know if you'll tell me, but you and Drake were having a conversation. It looked like a growing or a teaching moment in the game. Is there anything that you can kind of elaborate on and maybe give us a little insight onto what you guys might have been talking about? You know, the play point I'm talking about, you came off to the sidelines, you kind of were covering your mouth, looked like you were having a discussion.
We got lip readers out there.
Yeah. And I didn't know
So I covered my mouth, and then you asked me to talk about it here. So that really just takes away the entire reason
for
covering my mouth.
Well, maybe
I'm not answering. You cover your mouth for a reason.
I thought you didn't want the team to know, but now the game's over.
The other
team?
You think they can lip read from across
the
field?
So who you covering? Who's lip reading?
It's us.
You guys.
Oh, ain't no way we can lip read.
I mean, we did it with Jonathan.
I couldn't. All right,
let's go. Next question. Let's go.
I want to go back to you talked about reflection, but it's very hard to reflect in the middle of the season every day you're trying to get ready to the next. So have you had an opportunity, and how do you do that, I guess, in season, both reflecting on how to get better for yourself, but really the main focus, your job, is to make everybody else better around you.
Yeah, I would say, you know, with having a late bye week, that gave me an opportunity to really reflect.
Yeah.
And in saying that, you know, a few weeks later now, we had a very late bye week. You know, a few weeks later, I'll go back through it and get better and evaluate all those things.
Playing a tough team like Buffalo twice in such a short period of time, obviously both teams get to look at that film and fix things that maybe went wrong. What do you feel like the advantage is playing a team twice in such a short period of time at the end of the season?
Yeah, to me, it just kind of neutralizes everything. Like you just said, they get to see things and we get to see things, and that game's going to come down who can adjust faster.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what it's going to come down to.
All right, well, it's time now for the Hellman's Mayo Question of the Week. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. Wiggy?
Gerard, was there a conscious effort in the game yesterday from a defensive scheme where you were more focused on keeping Josh Allen in the pocket rather than, like, really attacking the pass rush? Because I almost felt like, you know, you kind of saw that from some of the defensive linemen.
Yeah, 100%. You know, this is one of the most dangerous players when he's a yard away from the sideline. Like, this guy can make all the throws across the field, down the field. And so keeping him in the pocket, that was definitely the goal. And I thought overall they did a good job doing that.
Any Christmas traditions as we get closer to Wednesday?
For the
Mayo family?
Open presents. The kids just love opening presents. And then, you know, as a dad, you start to have to build a bunch of things.
Yep.
And now that my kids are getting older, though, it's about the V-Bucks. It's about clothes. Yeah. It's about, like, some of that stuff.
But it's more about the money.
Yeah, that's right. Right. Show me the money.
What's Santa leaving in the stocking? How much is in the stocking?
Here's $100 in the stocking.
Are you ham, turkey, tenderloin?
I'm a turkey guy. I mean, not just like a basic turkey, though, like a Cajun turkey or a fried turkey, mm-hmm. yeah. you know, something like that. You know, everything tastes better fried.
Yeah,
white meat or dark meat.
I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go with the dark.
There you go.
All right. Well, thanks for everything this season so far. I hope you have a Merry Christmas. Wiggy's gonna be in.
Hey, don't ask anybody else that question.
All right, well, I mean, you know, it is.
Pick the right one.
I like it nice and juicy. I'm a ham guy, so. Yeah.
You don't like dark meat, though.
No, I mean, no, I don't mind it, but I'm a ham guy. I rather prefer ham over.
Ham's gross.
Yeah. Nice honey baked ham.
All right. Well, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
You'll be in Monday, next Monday before New Year's Eve?
I'm not sure. You guys tell me.
Well, I don't know. Wiggy's here.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'll be here.
All right. Yeah. Awesome. That conversation with the coach is brought to you by Cross Insurance. Cross Insurance, official insurance broker of the New England Patriots. Gerard Mayo, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, guys.
We'll be back right after this.
Speaking of endearing, look who's walking in here. Look who's rejoined us here after many, many weeks.
You exist! You're not just a guy on the phone.
He's decided to come back and say hi to his buddies. I'm talking, of course, about Patriots quarterback Drake May, who's brought to you by Northeast Men's Health, the experts in treating men's sexual health, with 5 New England offices or at northeastmenshealth.com, and by Cardi's Furniture and Mattresses. Get next day delivery with removal and disposal at Cardi's Furniture and Mattresses. It's a Christmas miracle. Drake May, back here in studio with us. Drake, how you doing today? Oh, let's get his microphone out. No one's going to know he's in here if we can't hear him. Let's get that going. All right, Drake, do we have you now?
You got me?
All right, there we go. Sounds good. All right, let's go ahead and start with, well, I guess there's a couple of ways we could start here with this game. You seemed very, I don't want to say defensive, but at the podium after the game, you definitely had the backs of your coaches, your offensive coordinator. It seems like these are things that you guys have all been hearing, and you were quick to sort of come to their defense.
Well, it's just the quarterback just defending, you know, my people and the people, you know, we work so hard with, you know, week in and week out. And I think just, you know, feel like it was, you know, the right time. And you know, I appreciate, you know, those coaches for, you know, putting the trust in me, and they drafted me. So I'm going to go to war with those guys anytime.
Not that you care, but I think a lot of people were impressed with the way you handled yourself in the post-game press conference. That comment, some of the self-deprecating stuff, talking about the red zone and the quarterback and things you need to do better. Does this come naturally to you? Like these interviews, press conferences, talking to us? Seems like you've handled it well, especially for a rookie. We've seen rookie quarterbacks that kind of step in it and say dumb things and create little brush fires. Do you enjoy this, and does it come naturally sort of saying the right things?
I think just growing up and, you know, kind of being in the, you know, see my brother in the media, seeing my brother in college, playing college basketball in the media a lot, and being in high school, and we were, you know, in a big high school, you know, Charlotte was a big high school area with football, so being in the media then, and throughout North Carolina, I was in the media at an early age and for a long time, so just being in the media a long time, and to feel like as a quarterback, it's important to be, you know, not quote unquote good in the media, but, you know, have the team's back and be able to say the right things and not say anything that's going to put, you know, the team on blast, and I'm a representative of the team, so I think, you know, me being you know, accountable and, you know, put myself, you know, in places where I think I could, you know, play better, and there definitely is a lot of times, and starts with protecting the football. So I think just part of how my parents raised me, and part of just, you know, getting, you know, media kind of media, what's it called when you're getting
savvy, experience?
Yeah, experience throughout
the. Yeah, I'd say you got that. In the run up to the game, you mentioned a few times that you played in some pretty cold temperatures in North Carolina. No one really believed you. You're like, okay, come on. You're going up to Buffalo now. You're going to compare that to how cold it is in North Carolina. How cold was it? You said you couldn't feel your feet at some point in the second half. How much of it did that affect the game and affect you personally?
Wasn't too bad, I didn't think. I think, you know, the biggest thing is the turf just got real hard and it kind of gets slick a little bit. You see some guys falling down. So that's the biggest thing. Some of the ground hits hurt a little more than usual. But, you know, really other than that, I think she was moving the ball well. And I thought we ran the ball well. We threw it well at times. So I didn't really think it affected us a whole lot there. Some of them long drives, my hands would get real cold as I, you know, dropped the snap on the last drive and something, little things like that. But I think throughout the game, I was proud of the guys of how we handled the cold, how we handled the atmosphere. So, you know, it was loud in there, and big fans and a good football team.
Have you considered going with the Tom Brady frog suit? I don't know if you've seen this, but Brady in really cold games used to wear this. It was almost like he was a scuba diver or something like that. Do they have that? Is that something that's like
Available. That's available. But I just went with, you know, a couple layers underneath, and I felt good running out there.
So we've talked a lot with you about designed runs. We've talked to AVP about it. We've talked to Coach Mayo. And yesterday it seemed like the first time we got some of those in action. How did that come about, and how did you feel that was maybe beneficial to the offense?
Yeah, I think down there in the goal, kind of the goal line, one, I should have cut it up and probably would have had a touchdown. You know, I apologize to Hunter, and Hunter was funny after. But, you know, really just helping us in short yardage situations, I think it can be a weapon for us. And, you know, at this time, right now, probably I feel like I can get a yard. I'm a big dude. And, you know, QB sneaking, I feel like I feel confident in getting a yard pretty much every time. So I think there's some different areas where we can, you know, help, you know, move the football. And, you know, say I'm still going to go back and, you know, Mondre and those guys are better runners than me, so I'd rather get the guys the ball. But it's easier when you're under center and you can go right from there than having to, you know, run 5 yards from, you know, where the running back's, you know, lined up.
If you could go back in time and run that play, the swing pass to Ramondre Stevenson again, what would you do differently this time?
Yeah, I think probably just throw it at the feet of one of the blockers out there. I think it's probably the best thing to do, or go up there, run it, and take a short sack. I think it's a tough scenario, that, you know, tough break that we had with that play. You're trying to cut, you know, big, you know, 6'7 defensive end is a good player, and I think Big Trey tried to do his best, and then I just so happened to be a backwards. You know, I tried to move back and make it a forwards pass, but that's just unfortunate. So we had something backside, but they went, I think, cover two backside, so it was tough.
Let's talk about something good, the throw to Booty. You guys have developed, seemingly, sort of as this year has gone on, a little bit of a rapport there. How comfortable are you with him and that type of play down the field, being a little bit more aggressive and giving him a shot to go get it?
For sure. That's what I told myself this week. Just give these guys a shot. I think as the weeks go on and on, I tell these guys every week, hey, I'm going to give you a shot. And I'll credit those guys for making plays when, you know, they got the opportunity. And, you know, after practice, we always throw kind of over-the-shoulder passes. And, you know, Booty and those guys stay after. And I think it's paying off a little bit. So, I appreciate those guys for, you know, wanting to put in the work and wanting one-on-one chances. And I think that will help us, you know, down the road of, you know, being able to not have guys just press us up and play man and kind of let them know that we can, you know, hurt them when they do that.
I feel like we've seen that even going back to training camp and some of the one-on-ones, that deep ball down the sideline. You seem really comfortable throwing that. Is that one of your better clubs in your bag, so to speak?
I like to think so, but I think about there's times throughout the year where I've missed that throw. So I think just giving the guys a chance is the biggest thing. That's what I always kind of found is, you know, don't even the one down the sideline early on to Mondre where I scrambled out early, but just give him a chance. You can get a PI, you can get him something. So I think that's kind of something that we're building on. And, you know, credit to Booty for beating him and making a nice grab.
We're talking to Drake May, quarterback of the New England Patriots. Drake, when you guys were down there on the 10-yard line towards the end of the game, you ran, I think, 11 plays within your 10-yard line. Having to do that over and over again, getting a touchdown called back on the replay, some of the penalties, I know they were mostly on Buffalo, but just having to keep running plays over and over again down there, how do you sort of not let that demoralize you? I know you guys wanted to score quickly. How are you able to kind of keep your head in the game there and eventually punch that one in?
I think the guys are playing hard down there. I think it's just, you know, more on myself to find some answers, get some answers when they're bringing blitz zero. They're playing man outside and they're switching some things off and, you know, bringing an extra guy up front. I got to, you know, be on myself to, you know, find answers, you know, faster and quicker and make better throws. I had KB on one of the PIs. I had, you know, KB on a corner route, and I think they left pop open in the flat. So little things were just building it. And that's really the first time where we've been down there real close and we had to pass the ball and not give it to one of those guys. We struggled to run down there. They're good up front. So I think it's one of those things where just figuring out answers and kind of, you know, great experience for us to get all those reps. But I think it's unfortunate we couldn't score earlier to kind of help our defense out of maybe getting, you know, one more stop in that last kind of 4-minute deal. So it was frustrating, but at the same time, I think we just wanted to score.
As you can tell by my sweatshirt, it's Christmas season. I don't wear this all the time. As an NFL quarterback, we see all these social media posts of what guys get their offensive linemen. Is there a pressure there? You know what you're going to get the guys up front for you?
Or? Yeah, I think he gets the guys something every year. I think that's a kind of a staple being the quarterback on the team. So we see a lot of, you know, guys throughout the league do some cool things. So I think it's a pretty cool deal.
Have you do you know what you're doing? You want to give us a?
No, I know what I'm doing. Yeah, I've given to the guys. So I ain't going to ruin that.
Okay. All right. Very good. Couldn't help but notice, obviously, in the first half, those first two drives. From our watching it at home, obviously, it seemed like you were as in control of the offense as you've been all season long. Did it feel that way in those first couple of drives? Did you feel that way?
I think, you know, multiple times throughout the season, I think we've been moving the ball well. I've been seeing it well. They had times versus the Rams, at times versus the Colts. There's times when we've been, in fact, we've been moving the ball well and running the ball well, throwing it well, blocking well. So it's a testament to this offense. We can do a lot of different things, getting a lot of different personnels, formations. Can hurt them different ways. I think that it's going to keep building, and we're getting kind of experience and just still figuring out these guys. I think my 10th start or so. So still got a long way to go. And think these guys are, you know, more and more figuring out scramble drill and, you know, me of stepping up in the pocket and little things like that.
Second half was a little tougher, obviously. What did Buffalo do to adjust to you guys?
I didn't think it was, you know, really anything that they did. I think we just, you know, turned the ball over. We had three turnovers, really, that put a defense in a tough spot. We gave them 10 points. And then, really, I think we're still moving the ball on them. I think we just didn't have many possessions. And I think it's kind of easy to correlate that between the first half where we were moving the ball well.
You said something yesterday, proud to be a Patriot, that I think resonated with a lot of fans. I saw a lot of people reacting on social media. Why are you proud to be a Patriot?
Yeah, I'm just fortunate that he took a chance on me. You know, I'm fortunate to be in this. I think that's what you want to be around, somebody who expects winning. And you know, that's how I grew up, you know, expecting to win and, you know, hate losing. I think everybody can agree with that. And just the fan base, how they embraced me, I appreciate it. And so it's also a place to play football. And it's a big responsibility playing quarterback here. And I take that with a lot of responsibility.
All right, quarterback question of the week brought to you by Northeast Men's Health, the experts in treating men's sexual health with five New England offices or at northeastmenshealth.com. This comes to us from Katie in Hanover, and she says, Drake, there's a video of you going all around Twitter of you playing basketball in high school. And I've seen that video, by the way. You got a nice-looking jump shot. When did you decide that it was going to be football, not basketball, and how serious did you take your basketball career?
Yeah, I loved basketball growing up. You know, watching my older brother and watching his career was awesome for me. So I always played both throughout high school, and thought about playing both in college for a little bit, but figured playing quarterback in college was a little bit too much of my plate to play both.
Could you have done that at UNC? You think you were good enough?
I'm not sure. I'd like to bet on myself, but I'd have to probably work on a lot of different areas of my game to play at that level.
A few back in the day, Ronald Curry, I think Julius Peppers.
Yeah, Julius Peppers played. Yeah, a bunch of different people. So
that'd have been pretty cool.
No, North Carolina, that's high level basketball. So.
All right, well, you got something to fall back on, right? Of course. There you go. That's Drake May, quarterback of the New England Patriots. Merry Christmas, Drake, and good luck next weekend against the Chargers.
Yeah, right? Merry Christmas. Thanks,
all right.
Thanks, Drake.
That is Drake May, quarterback of the Patriots.
And also joining us each and every Patriots Monday is Christian Gonzalez, Patriots cornerback. He's brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh, and by Drains by James, Eastern Mass's top provider of drain and sewer cleaning and repair. Christian Gonzalez, how are we doing this week?
Good, you?
We're doing well. It was a better performance for you guys yesterday, despite the loss. What do you think worked well in the first half compared to the second half?
We just came out fast, made plays in the first half, and we didn't execute too well in the second half.
So, Christian, looking at the box score, it seems like they really didn't throw much your way yesterday. Were you anticipating a heavier workload yesterday? Were you anticipating that they weren't going to throw your way, or did that come as a surprise to you?
You know, always going into a game expecting targets. That's the art of the position. You never know how many you're going to get or how many, you just got to make a play that come your way. So just always staying ready.
Marte Mapu made a play that came his way yesterday. He picked off Josh Allen in the end zone, which was good. He also ran it out, or at least attempted to run it out of the end zone, which was regrettable. How do you balance, taking a knee in that spot versus running it out?
It's just all about, thinking you have a time to take it out or not. I mean, it's kind of hard, but, happy for him that he was able to make the play. And I believe offense went on a long drive after that, so worked out.
So yesterday, in absence of a lot of targets coming your way, it seems the Buffalo was trying to target your teammate Jonathan Jones, who was on Khalil Shakir a lot, played a really, really, really good game. I think only one pass completed on him all day for Shakir. How impressed were you by that performance, and what does somebody like Jonathan Jones mean to you as a teammate?
A lot. I mean, he means a lot. He's the vet of the room, and always there when any of us have questions. Wasn't surprised at all by the performance. He's been playing at a high level for a real long time. So happy for him that he got to show that again.
I know a lot of guys, when we ask about playing in the elements, they're like, it's great playing in the elements. I love playing in the cold and the snow and all this. But be honest, how much does a freezing game like yesterday, how much does that suck? Because that did not look fun for you guys.
Yeah, it's tripping. They're saying they're having fun. as cold. That was the coldest I ever been. So
as cold as you've ever been, really?
No. Yeah, I mean it don't affect you, but you know you don't let it affect the game. But it's cold out there for sure.
Christian, have you had a chance to, over the weekend, I'm sure you were very busy, obviously, preparing for a big game like that as well, but did you have a chance to watch any of the college football playoffs, and are you fired up for your Ducks, who have a big opportunity coming up in just over a week?
Yeah, I watched a couple of the games. First round, we know, wasn't too entertaining. It was some blowouts. But, yeah, I mean, we got Oregon got a big one coming up. You know, part two, seeing Ohio State again. So, you know, Ohio State looked good. So,
I don't want to
come out and see what we got to do.
I'm sorry to jump in, Christian. I don't want to get you in any trouble with, you know, wagering on games or anything like that. But Oregon is an underdog. I was shocked to see this. Oregon beat Ohio State earlier this year. It was at Autzen. It wasn't on a neutral field. But Oregon beat Ohio State earlier this year. They're actually an underdog in that game. Any thoughts on that?
That's cool. I mean, you know, give us even more, even they give them more, you know, want to so given Oregon the underdog is, I mean, we'll take it.
Christian, I was kind of curious, you know, one of the big things, like, you know, you see like quarterbacks give a lot of gifts to their offensive linemen and such, and people exchanging gifts around the holidays. Does the secondary do any sort of like gift exchanging? Is there like a Yankee swap or anything? Do you guys do that on the team?
I mean, sometimes it depends. We talk about it.
But not this year, it sounds like.
I don't know. We might.
Okay, well, that's true. You still got some time, which I think is going to tie in well. Are you ready for man-to-man-to-man coverage? 3 men, 10 questions. You ready, Gonzo?
All right.
Let's hit it.
It's man-to-man coverage. Quick hitters with Christian Gonzalez.
Yes! Yes! Not yes! Not yes! Hell yes!
Now, Christian, you may have spoiled the answer already with this one. Are you all done with your Christmas shopping?
No, I'm not.
Okay, Christian, when it comes to Christmas gifts, do you wrap your own or do you pay someone to do it for you?
I usually have somebody do it.
Nice. All right, this has been a big discussion on this talk radio station and throughout the country. Do NBA players, in your opinion, shoot too many threes?
No, let it fly.
Let it fly. Okay. I'm not sure if you're a big holiday movies guy, Christian, but maybe the most iconic line of all time, no man who has friends is a failure. Is that true or false?
No man who has what?
No man who has friends is a failure. Is that true or false?
False. True. I don't know.
Okay, it's one or the other. What was the one Christmas gift you always wanted as a kid but never got?
Probably some shoes or something.
Some shoes. Mine was the Ninja Turtles pizza flipper van. I never got that. I was real distraught still to this day.
I always wanted an easy bake oven. Scented candles, totally lit or just not it?
Yeah, I like them. They're cool.
Lit. Have you ever seen Pocket Money on NESN?
What?
Pocket Money is a very popular show on NESN. Have you ever seen it?
Nah.
Ooh, it was good.
Yeah, a questionable host. Christian, re-gifting, acceptable around the holidays, yes or no?
One more time?
Re-gifting. Is it acceptable to re-gift around the holidays? You know, get a gift and then give it to someone else.
Yeah.
When is the appropriate... Oh, I'm sorry. Keep going.
No, you're good.
When is the appropriate time, Christian, to take down all your Christmas stuff? Tree, decorations, all that. When's the appropriate time to do that?
After New Year's.
Wait till New Year's? Okay. Start the New Year off right. And Christian... When you go to the movies, smuggling in your own food and drink, is it cool every time or is that a total crime?
You always got to take your own stuff.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Well, that's how you do man-to-man-to-man coverage. Three men, 10 questions. Christian, we always appreciate it. Best of luck with the final couple of games. Happy holidays, and we'll talk to you soon.
I appreciate it. You too.
All right. Christian Gonzalez joining us here on a Patriots Monday, as he does each and every week. He had not seen Pocket Money, unfortunately.
I can't believe that. I mean, they rerun it all the time, too.
KJ Lyons in for Jones and Keefe. It's now time to trend with Joe Braverman.
What work did you guys do on Lad McConkey?
Yeah, we did some work on him. A guy that can get open versus man-to-man coverage. And look, he's playing well right now. He also does a good job finding space in the zone coverages, and he's definitely a player you got to keep your eye on.
When it came to not selecting a player like that, how much was it due to his position being a slot receiver and you guys having a slot receiver?
I mean, look, as a whole, I would say we're always looking to improve our roster. Now, what position that happens to be could change on a daily basis, during those times. So, look, we got the guys that we have here, and our focus is just on this game.
KJ and Lyons in for Jones and Keefe. 617-779-7937. John, that is amazing. Why are you not asking Elliot Wolf why you didn't take Lad McConkey? Why are you asking Jerod Mayo when Jerod Mayo is not the one making the selections? Like, that is what's baffling to me because – look, we have these conversations. Oh, they could have had this person. They could have had that person. And then go straight to the head coach. Look, if this was Belichick, that's the question to ask. This is not Belichick. Ask Elliot Wolf. But you know what? Jerod Mayo can't say that because then guess what it becomes? A soundbite. Oh, you're going to have to you have to ask Elliot about that because they have to be on this universal message. But why are you asking the head coach who has no personnel power, he has no personnel control over this team, why didn't you draft Lad McConkey or what you passing up on the guy? I think that's asinine.
Can we also ask him why they didn't draft Roger Rosengarten instead too? Ravens tackle? Wouldn't mind having that guy.
Well,
right,
don't
now
ask,
as well.
Don't ask Mayo any of that stuff.
One of the things, and this is going back to training camp, but when I was down there, I was, in one of those media scrums that they do every day, Mayo's answering questions, and he said something that really stood out to me, and that it was that Elliot Wolf had final say even on roster cuts at the end of training camp. And on my mind, I'm like, man, I feel like even the teams with GMs that are powerful, the coach has a lot of say in who gets cut at the end of training camp. I mean, that's bottom of the roster guys. They're out there with him every day. And it's like, no, everything about this roster is Elliot Wolf, including Lad McConkey being on the Chargers instead of the Patriots. And look, I think you can agree, if Lad McConkey was here, he would not be having anywhere near the season he's having in L.A. right now. However, he'd be probably giving them a hell of a lot more than they've gotten out of Jalen Polk and Javon Baker combined.
At least there'd be a developmental story between the rookie quarterback and a rookie receiver and going to get
Lad
the veteran
McConkey, sorry to cut you off. He's leading the Chargers in receiving by over 400 yards.
Well, they have nobody else, really.
I'm just going to go check on Fitzy to make sure he still has a pulse because his Lad McConkey man crush just broke his heart.
Well, that's because he's just trying to figure out how to make his next T-shirt.
My guy,
like,
Josh Palmer.
Ask Fitzy, how is that inventory of all that Mac Jones T-shirt, all that T-shirt merch that he had Mac Jones on? Why is it not discounted at $1? Why is this stuff not being sent over to third world countries?
Because it's a Fitzy original. That's like having a Rembrandt, you know? You get a Fitzy original. That's like hanging a Rembrandt or a Van Gogh painting in your house. Yeah,
it's like
get a Van Gogh in my house. Same thing as having a Fitzy shirt.
It's like the two Super Bowl T-shirts you make for two winner shirts, and then whoever loses the Super Bowl, you send all those winner shirts over to some of these lower developed countries. I think Fitzy should probably contact the NFL, get in contact with Merton Hanks. How can you get rid of some of this Mac to the Future merch that was so hot? And now, I mean, shoot, you couldn't even give it to a robber to put it on for a ski mask and cut it. And I mean, that's you can't move that stuff at all.
This Chargers team, we played
Probe That Wound. It was fine.
Is an interesting case study in the road not taken, right? Because this Chargers team, they've drafted better than the Patriots over the last 3-4 years, but they fired their coach last year. They went out and hired Jim Harbaugh, a guy that had won the national championship in Michigan, had been to a Super Bowl in the NFL. The Patriots went the other way, where they went with a bunch of young guys, bunch of rookies at coordinators, position coaches, front office, all that. The Chargers are more experienced. And look, Chargers in a little bit of a different place, in fairness, but they're going to be a playoff team. Patriots are the opposite of that. And that's something, it's something to monitor this week, but this is something to watch for next year, year after? Like, if 3 years from now the Chargers are still better than the Patriots, we're going to look back at them not interviewing Harbaugh, not hiring him, as a big mistake. But if not, then it's just that's something I'm watching Saturday as well.
But John, the genesis of it all is, what does a rebuild look like after 20 years of dominance? No one's ever had that conversation. Maybe the Montreal Canadiens in the late 60s into the
2000s,
but that's even the 49ers after the 80s, you know, when they had that 10-year run of playoffs or going to the NFC Championship or to the Super Bowl, there were still some remnants of, you know, of
because what they win was it 94 they won another, their last Super Bowl, right? Wasn't it one of those, like 94, 95, something, it was in there.
It's so, late, a little bit later than that, because I think my daughter was born when Steve Young won it, when they beat Natron Means in San Diego.
That might have been 95, because 96 the Packers beat the Patriots. So point being, though, after that, then it was like some of those remnants really all started to peel away.
Well, what I'm getting with the Chargers and what they have now, right? So when Justin Herbert's selected, they already have Keenan Allen. They have a healthier Mike Williams who was supposed to develop into something. Austin Eckler was able to develop himself on the roster. Then remember, they had Bosa on the line. They made the deal to get Khalil Mack from Chicago. So they're making these moves of getting star pieces. Then when Herbert gets in there, man, there is nothing that they had that the Patriots have now, right? Like when Justin Herbert stepped on the field as the quarterback for the Chargers still had a better roster on both sides of the ball than what the Patriots have right now. And then as you start to move forward, look, they actually started peeling off Keenan Allen. They peeled off Mike Williams because of the injuries. So really, it's like, okay, we've got Justin Herbert, and then we get to Joe Alt, right, because he needs an offensive lineman. So there are some similarities of what you hear what the Patriots need, but how many years are we in with Justin Herbert? Like 7-8 years now?
No, I think he was drafted in 2020, right? Because it went Burrow, Herbert, then Tua were the first three quarterbacks taken.
Yeah, so he's just, so maybe about 5-6. So yeah, because what if it's 2020, we're coming up on 25. So it's been 5 years that you've had him, but he had things that were in place when he got to the league. Now to the point where, like, okay, you're that guy, so we don't need to continue to pay Keenan Allen. We can let go of Mike Williams. We don't believe he's going to be the player. We can let an Austin Eckler go. We'll just make sure we get you probably generational talent in Joe Alt. I mean, am I saying his father's name?
No, but the Chargers, to that point, they probably have a top 10 offensive line in the NFL. I mean, Rashawn Slater, is an elite player. Joe Alt, first round pick. I know offensive linemen can never win rookie of the year. That dude could be rookie of the year. I mean, he looks awesome. They have Zion Johnson,
Steph Curry type
there.
Pedigree, right? Like, yeah. He does what his father does, and what his father did was great work. So, you know, Joe Alt comes from a stock of, like, you understand this game. You've got people like Art Shell sitting at your dinner table when you're a kid discussing technique, you know, like as a head coach. So when you get exposed to those things, I give a little more advantage. But I think, and this goes back to the situation here with the Patriots and with Elliot Wolf. You mentioned how Gerard Mayo saying Elliot Wolf makes these final decisions. Well, think about it. You signed KJ Osborne to a deal. But you remember you're talking about, like, why did it take so long? Because probably Mayo was like, okay, I have the sitting pink slip waiting for this particular guy for you to sign off on, Elliot Wolf. And Elliot Wolf has got to think, like, I just gave this guy money. I just gave, what's the guy's name? Okafor money, and this isn't working out.
I gave Leverett, both of those guys, gone.
So if you're Elliot Wolf, you're like, wow, I just gave these guys money, and the coach says these guys aren't working. At some point, it becomes the spotlight is on you as the GM, because these are the guys you went out and got. And if these guys can't work out on a team that's struggling to get, will struggle to get to five wins this year, will struggle to get to five wins, but these guys can't contribute in some way, I think that compass points more towards Elliot Wolf in terms of his decision-making about the roster versus what Mayo has to cook with.
Well, and I think there's two questions to look at here. So, over the next 5, 6, 7 years, would you rather have Jim Harbaugh and Justin Herbert or Gerard Mayo and Drake May, right? Like, that's one question. But the other question is, would you rather have that Chargers front office to put together a pretty damn good roster around them, or the uncertainties that's here with Elliot Wolf, Matt Groh, and some of the Patriots front office?
You know, just the person looking at what's going on the field to say, oh, give me Harbaugh and Burrow. But I would say, actually give me that Chargers front office, because they made deals, right? They made a deal to get Khalil Mack in here. So what would be the equivalent? Maybe they can make a deal to get a top receiver in here. You can probably have conversations of getting good deals with offensive linemen. Why? Because you've built one of the best offensive line in the league. So the two things that the Patriots need the most is what the Chargers have built to do for their own team.
And like, make you look deals at and get a line. Chargers roster. I mean, like, Derwin James, top 10 safety in the league. Asante Samuel missed some time this year, but a really good corner. You mentioned Bosa and Matt, like, legit at every level of the defense, really good pieces. And then offensively, top 10 offensive line. You have a couple, like, McConkey's really good. I think Josh Palmer's good, too. You have the great quarterback. Like, they've put together a really good roster. It's not the Eagles. It's not the Lions. It's not one of those elite ones. But it's really damn good, and it's probably three or four steps ahead of the Patriots. So that's why you look at it, and I know the easy, the sexy, the fun question is, would you rather have Herbert or May the next 5-6 years? And it's a fair debate. I'd probably take Herbert right now, but I think the better question is, do you have as much faith in the Patriots front office to put together a roster around May like the Chargers have around Herbert?
Well, then that makes Mayo kind of the scapegoat, which I think people are jumping on right now, saying, hey, have you looked at really the roster overall for the Patriots? And did you believe this was even, say, a 7-10 team, right? Like, you would hope for that. Like, you're saying, look, if it's going to be a losing season, let it be a competitive season where you win some games that people don't think you would win. You win the games that you figure, hey, putting roster against roster, like a Tennessee game or even the Indianapolis game, you would say these are games that you feel like you should be able to win with the talent on the field, and those games you aren't winning. Maybe it is the talent. Some of it is going to be the coaching, but I think that coaching portion of it gets a little bit overrated when it comes to the quality of team, because you can't tell me the best coach in the world. Like, you couldn't even tell me if you brought Belichick back, all spirits alive, and he didn't have to deal with Mac Jones, and he had a rookie quarterback, that this would be a 7-10 team. I think at best with Belichick, maybe this is a 5-6 win team.
I was going to say 6, yeah, like in that neighborhood right now. But yeah, I mean, that's the question to ask, because it looks like you have the franchise quarterback in Drake May. I mean, what we saw Sunday in Buffalo, they lost, but he went toe-to-toe with Josh Allen. He made the best throw of the day, that touchdown pass to Kayshon Booty.
Gave the team a considerable lead.
So do you have faith that the Patriots will put together a roster around Drake May like the Chargers have around Herbert? And also, even just go to last week, like the Bills have around Josh Allen. I mean, do you have that level of faith that they'll put a roster around those guys? Because remember, when Josh Allen got there, the Bills weren't that good. Then they bought him out, I think, the next year. And then they started to assemble this roster around him. And now, look, Allen's the MVP. They have a great roster as well. And you can say the same thing for the Chargers. They have the great quarterback there, but they also have a really good roster around him. Do you have that same level of faith in the Patriots front office? And based off what we saw this spring, I don't. I don't know about you, but just, I mean, look at this past spring. Antonio Gibson is a really good player. Nice piece to it. Sure. Austin Hooper, nice complimentary piece. Has anybody beyond that they've brought in made a big impact? I mean, I know Drake May, okay, he's been good. But really, I mean, of the guys they brought in free agency, any big impact guys?
Well, you look at the record. That should tell you everything right there.
All right. I said it before the break. Let's get right to it. Callers everywhere. We'll start with Dan in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Dan.
It's on my Spotify list, Dan. I mean, Fitz.
Nice, Danny.
Happy holidays to you guys.
Happy holidays.
Look, I don't get ahead of something. I am rooting like Christ tomorrow for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Why?
Amen.
Because all we're left for now is draft position, and you are one win away from seeing Mitch Trubisky at the end of the season, which will be the topic du jour for the Patriots to tank, because at number 2 right now in a 2-quarterback draft, you're in a great position. There are 7 other teams besides you, not including the Giants, that either have 3 or 4 wins. And you could tumble down the leaderboard to like even 6 or 7 in a worst case scenario. I don't want to see that. I don't need a meaningless momentum winning, you know, win at the end of the year to build to next year. They are screwed. You take yourself out of Travis Hunter sweepstakes for one, if you want to go that route, or to trade out in a 2-quarterback draft, you're giving away basically a future number 1 pick where you could probably trade down from 2 to 6 or 7 and pick up all that capital. So please, please, please do not face Mitch Trubisky at the end of the year, because we know it's going to happen when that happens, because they will sit everybody because they don't need it.
Appreciate the phone, guys.
Have a good holiday.
Appreciate
Merry
it,
Christmas,
Dan.
Danny. Good holidays to you.
He's right, and I was looking at Tankathon the other day. Like it would be perfect if the draft position held up as currently constituted. It won't, but if it did, the Patriots would be picking number 2 after the Giants. So the Giants would, in my opinion, probably take Shedeur Sanders. They need a quarterback. They'll probably take Shedeur Sanders. If a team falls in love with Cam Ward, or you know, if Jalen Milroe rises at training camp time or combine time, that's the word, combine time, and somebody falls in love with Cam Ward or Jalen Milroe or whoever and wants to come up, like the Patriots are in the perfect position, because I would love to see Tennessee come up and you move back to 4. It's like 4 to me is the perfect spot, because then quarterback comes off the board. Jacksonville's not taking a quarterback because they have Trevor Lawrence. They probably take Travis Hunter. I don't want Travis Hunter on this team. I don't even want the pick.
You're kidding.
No, I'm dead serious. I don't even want the pick to be thought about for people. I don't want it to even have the option, because they'll be duped into something stupid, I think.
Shime has an irrational hate for Travis Hunter.
No, it's not an irrational hate. It's just like, I just don't think he's going to be a great NFL pro. I think he's a tremendous athlete. He seems like a cool dude. Seems awesome. Loved his Heisman speech. Happy for him. Great. Good job. I think the hype around him is way too much. It is part of the Dion hype machine.
Wow.
Personally.
For someone with almost 1,200 yards receiving, all those touchdowns and plus level cornerback play, you think there's too much hype around him?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be a wide receiver in the NFL. I think he's going to be a corner, and he's going to be like a number 2 corner, and he might have a decent career, but he's not going to be anything special. I don't think he's good enough at either position. Like, he is not the best receiver in the draft. He's not the best corner in the draft. I don't want a guy that comes in, and the cool thing is he plays both ways. In the NFL, you can't do that. Like, it doesn't work. Like, it just doesn't. And so I want nothing to do with Travis Hunter. And by being 4th, it takes him completely out of the perspective, because Jacksonville will take him at 3, and it leaves you in a spot where you can then take, you acquire draft picks from going from 2 to 4, and you can then still take Tet McMillan or Kelvin Banks out of Texas. Those would be my top 2 guys right now.
Not,
I love both of them.
Do you not think the Patriots would benefit from having the 2nd overall pick, though? And if it is a 2-quarterback draft, and there's teams that are that hype on Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward, if somebody wants to trade up that desperately to get him, would you not want the Patriots to trade down a few spots and pick up extra draft capital?
Oh, yeah, no, that's exactly
what I'm saying. I'm all in on that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, if you finish the season number 2 overall, I want you to trade down to, like, 4, 5, 6. Like, that's where I want to be. I want you to trade down with Tennessee at 4 or Vegas at 6. Like, those, to me, are the perfect spots, I think, to be.
At 6 is exactly – they need a quarterback – so badly.
Yeah, and so does Tennessee.
It's really not a quarterback-rich draft. Like
Tennessee is dealing with Will Levis and Mason Rudolph. And I actually think Brian Callahan might actually be like a decent coach, the way he coaches that Tennessee team.
He won me over with that expletive-laden speech last week.
And I saw his interaction with Ja'Marr Chase after the Cincinnati game, and like, Chase loves him. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize. I never knew that about
Burrow's play caller for a couple of years. Yeah.
Yeah. So I like that. All right. Let's go to Chris in Brockton, wants to talk about bar pizza. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, guys. What's up?
What's up?
Good morning. Happy holidays.
Good. I grew up in Quincy. I lived in Brockton, and I sold my house. So I moved to East Longmeadow. And there's no pizza out here. But when I go back, Fitzy, I go to the next page out of Jackson Square, is it?
Yeah. How's their pie?
Beautiful, but you gotta try it. There's nothing really out here except for the Red Rose.
Yeah, it's like once you go east of Worcester, Shime, like bar pizza is just a faint memory. It's like, oh, that's a proper Massachusetts thing, not a Eastern New York type of thing.
Yeah, I always tell people, anytime I've ever been asked what's the difference between the North Shore of Massachusetts and the South Shore, like there's really no difference. It's just all Boston, right? I'm like, no.
There's not much.
The difference is North Shore has the North Shore beef. South Shore has the bar pie.
Correct.
That is the biggest difference in North Shore versus South Shore.
And the water's just a little colder. The real estate is just as expensive.
Yep.
You'll get architectural differences and whatnot, but it's the same people. But once you get into Berkshire County, it's like a strange, love me some Berkshires. I've grown to love Western Mass a ton over the past decade, but it's it's like its own fiefdom. It's like not quite Massachusetts. It's not quite New York State. It really is its own domain as well. Like it kind of belongs to New York, Mass, Vermont, and Connecticut. It's almost like international waters.
All right, Matt and Waltham, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? You're doing a great job today. I really like the show. I know you're running with a bit of a skeleton crew out there.
Appreciate it.
First of all, let me just say the best pizza, hands down, is the Rhode Island bakery-style pizza served in little strips, no cheese, with just sauce. It's delicious. I'll die on that hill every day.
No cheese? Interesting.
No,
okay.
It's a big, it's like in strips, it's almost like a grandma pie. It is quite delicious.
I'm into the idea of strips, but the no cheese is throwing me off. But hey, man, all power to you.
But so what I wanted to talk to you about is the fact that, you know, I grew up, I'm 21, so I grew up watching Gerard Mayo in the prime of some of those great Pats defenses. You know, I remember when he won, I believe it was 2008 when he was drafted, he won Defensive Rookie of the Year. I think it was unanimous or almost unanimous. I loved watching him as a kid. My first signed piece of sports memorabilia that I ever owned was a signed Gerard Mayo jersey. I still have it. It's framed up real nice. And it's real hard for me as someone who grew up loving him as a player. When they hired him, I was so excited. I wanted to love him as a head coach, and I did. That first week when they beat Cincinnati, my mm-hmm. God, I was so excited. Mm-hmm. And now with all the negativity that's around him, and it hurts to say, because I love him as a player, I want to love him as a coach, but right now he's just not doing it. And it's really disappointing for me, someone who grew up watching him play some of those great Pats defenses. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate the call, Matt. Thank you. Merry Christmas.
I see. Shime, that's that point I made a couple Sundays ago when I called in with you, Mego, and Arcand on the Football Sunday. The identity of this team continues to evade Gerard Mayo ownership and all the coordinators, even the players. They are the Matriots because the only identity this team has is Drake May. And we thought we got a feel for who they were going to be week one. When they started a barroom brawl with Cincinnati, and Cincy wasn't ready for that smoke that week, and they won the game. Jabril Peppers flexing at the end of the game. This is effing what we do. This is who we are. Loved it. It was so much better than, you know, take him to the hill. So much better than last year's you lucky we ass. And then somewhere along the lines in that second week against Seattle, things changed, and they just lost their identity. And then by the time the Jets put a whooping on them that Thursday night, the season was kind of already in free fall, like ball game.
Yeah, it's tough. I look at this Patriots team too, and I'm just like, I wish some things had gone just slightly differently. Like, I wish he had just been a little bit more aggressive. I wish Drake May didn't throw like a pick or two at the end of the games. The outlook on this season could be totally different for a lot of people if just like one or two things changed. I know Belichick said it, and we ripped him last year. Like, you know, couple things change and we're a much better football team. And I think that's the same thing here, right? Like, I think there's a couple moments that change in this season, and the outlook for everyone is entirely different. You're not quite as upset with Gerard Mayo. There might be a little bit more inspiration coming into season two. You might have a little bit more faith in the organization, but unfortunately, like, it's just, I feel like the die never went their way.
Do you believe then if this team has the groundwork, if you will, the foundation is being laid for being a couple different things go their way type of team and we'll have a much better season next year, then do you believe it to be a personnel matter or a coaching and executive capacity matter? Like, which a change in which is going to tilt the tables in their favor next year more?
I think a coaching change, like a coaching philosophy change, would tilt the tables just a little bit more. But I don't think the personnel is, that's not me saying the personnel is good. I think the personnel is bad, but I think the quarterback is good enough that you can win games if the rest of the team is well coached. Like, if the team had if Gerard Mayo, if it was Bill Belichick, right? All things being equal, and I hate making this comparison because Bill's one of the greatest of all time, and Gerard Mayo is a rookie coach in a tough situation.
I too want to live in a disclaimer-free Pats Nation, Chime.
But if it was Bill Belichick with exactly what we have, the defense would be better, there would be less penalties, and the quarterback is way better than anything you've had the last two seasons. And so, like, that alone to me was like, okay, you have so much going for you going forward. Now it's just like you add a couple pieces on the roster and you're cooking with gas. That's why, like, for me, I think it's more of a coaching thing than anything else.
Yeah, the sad part is that simulation does not exist.
No, it doesn't.
And what we have to look forward to is, do they draft well and spend the money well, or do they do that okay, but make wholesale coaching changes, or do they do a combination therein? Like, do you believe in your heart of hearts, as a Pats fan and someone who has to talk in and traffic around all of this on a regular basis, do you believe this coaching staff comes back next year lump sum or slightly altered?
Very slightly altered is my guess. I think I have a feeling DeMarcus Covington may be like the scapegoat. Like, this is the change we're going to make, and he might be out of a job. And then you might see some, what's the word? Like assistants brought in, just like kind of like special assistants, almost like Ben McAdoo type people that have been around football a lot, and advisors maybe that just come in and assist, similar to what the Celtics did with Joe Mazzulla, right? They bring in the Sam Cassells and the Brendan Lees and all those guys.
And the Charles, like, yeah, that Charles helped Lee, Joe Mazzulla so much.
Exactly.
Last year.
I think that's what the Patriots should do if they really want to ride with Gerard Mayo as their head coach.
Okay. Do you think there's any chance this offseason, depending on where Mike Vrabel goes and who he brings with him?
Yep.
Like, let's say Vrabel takes, maybe not the Jets job, but he takes another job, right? Maybe, I don't know, it could be Cleveland, could be who, even though Stefanski is not the problem in Cleveland. Let's say Vrabel goes somewhere else, does not bring McDaniels. Do you think ownership, still, I won't say, you know, enamored of the pass, do they go to Mayo and say, like, look, you know, Van Pelt, we gave you Van Pelt, he was 12 of 12, he's done a nice job, but we really think Josh is in the area. He's interested in coaching again. Do you think that could happen?
I don't think it could happen. So Andy made me believe that there's a chance it could happen, in that, like, he made it seem like Alex Van Pelt is the kind of guy who would take a demotion. If that was the case, if Alex Van Pelt stayed on the staff, but was like moved to like assistant offensive coach and quarterback coach,
permanent May whisperer,
and Josh McDaniels basically just came in to, you know, call the offensive plays, I guess that to me is more realistic than outright firing Van Pelt.
Yeah, I would not kick that out of bed for eating pizza crust.
Yeah. 617-779-7937 if you want to weigh in. We'll get to more of your calls here, talk more about the Patriots. But Fitzy and I also want to get to the unsung heroes of 2024. We'll do all that coming up. It's Fitzy and Shime filling in for the Greg Hill Show. It's the Greg Hill Show. Shime and Fitzy filling in on this beautiful Christmas Eve morning. Fitzy, you think we're going to get any snow today for Christmas?
Believe it or not, Shime, from my Southern New England WEEI studios, I have been awash in snowfall for the last several hours. So it's en route to the greater Boston
Jackson
area.
Is it snowing outside?
Yes, as a matter of fact, it is.
Oh, wow. Neat. Let's go.
Isn't that cool?
Hell yeah. Makes me feel
I think
good.
We actually may have, in considering the Arctic temperatures, look at that. I think we're going to have a white Christmas for the first time in forever.
Mitch has the traffic cam up on the screen. We got some snow coming down outside. Oh, this is the best. Love this. White Christmases are the best. Like, it just feels cozy, especially when it's not like a blizzard. It's just a nice flurry, light flurry, maybe like 2-3 inches, nothing too crazy. Oh, it's so cozy. I can't wait.
Hey, speaking of Christmas, did you go to Courtney's party?
I did not. No,
you didn't. You couldn't go?
No. I had to do a couple things pre-Christmas Eve. And so I was actually almost late getting to the Bruins game last night, and so I was unable to
attend. I did not dare go and be, you know, patient X and getting people at our party sick.
It looked like they were having fun.
Was it a homestead party or an out at...
No, it was at her home.
Yeah, it was at her home. She has a Christmas Eve party every year. It looked like what they were doing. They were doing one of my favorite party things, Fitzy. I don't know if you're familiar with the haircut.
Oh, a key party?
No. No, not a key party. A haircut, which is when...
7 minutes in heaven. Oh, the haircut where you sit in the chair and you get like whipped cream and a shot?
More or less. So it's you sit in a chair or you get on a knee, and it's Dr. McGillicuddy's straight into the mouth and chocolate syrup. And they fill you up real nice. And then you shake it all up and you swallow it. It's delicious. It's delightful. It's the only time in my life I ever enjoy mint and chocolate together. Otherwise, I think it's disgusting. Give it to
you
me.
Don't
just
like
send it right down my gullet. Yep, exactly.
You don't like mint and chocolate together?
No, I think it's a hot take. It's the worst combination.
Peppermint bark
on the
is incredible.
No, it's not. It's terrible.
It's outstanding. So wait a second. So my wife wanted to do something different So we did a spouse swap. Like she got a bottle for Why Christmas swap? Day of the chocolate peppermint espresso martini bottle stuff. Like it's, you know, I'm not in on the espresso martini like everybody else is. But she did a little sampler at the local Packy and came back home. She's like, this was delicious. We're going to have these on Christmas Day. Like, you know what? Maybe with a little crema on top with a little broken up peppermint bark. I'm in.
Yeah, I'm out on most peppermint things generally. Like mint chip ice cream, send it to the moon. I don't want it.
Send it to my mouth.
No way.
Is going to be back in my face in a
yes,
minute.
Yes, it is.
I'm going to use that against you.
Those Andes mint chocolates, nope, send them to the sun.
Are you kidding? Shine.
Fire them into the sun.
Every year, whenever I go to...
Peppermint patties, take them.
Oh, my God, please.
Shove them in the mouth, Vesuvius.
I want the lower depths of my Viking ship to Valhalla filled with them.
No, I'm so out.
Like, every Christmas, whenever... Those little like round peppermints that are like soft, you pop them in your mouth and they just kind of like melt in there, as opposed to like candy canes, which are just a sticky hard mess.
Yeah, they are a mess.
Oh,
so here's the thing. I like a mint every once in a while. Like those little like circle peppermints that are like white with the red lines on them. Like I can
They've been sitting in that tray at your grandmother's house by the door for 9 years.
Yeah, in a little plastic bag. Like I could pop one of those in and that's fine. But when you put mint with chocolate, I want you to fire it directly into the sun.
Oh, it's so good. I can't do it.
And I love chocolate. Like, this is somebody who is a chocoholic till the day I die. I would fire that into the sun. I want nothing
like
to do
with it. Two of them respective of each other, but they just can't party in the same sack.
Correct. That's exactly
it.
Wow. Yep. It's how I live my life. Ryan in Manchester wants to accost me on the Travis Hunter take. Go ahead, Ryan.
Man, this is just a lot of ammo today. 7 minutes in heaven and the wife swap references in the same paragraph is really kind of throwing me off with the candy talk. I just gone right down the tubes, man.
Fair enough.
But listen, a couple things. Travis Hunter, man, if you please just tell me, Shime, you're not in the camp of trading down and clogging holes that the incompetence of this franchise has created and not take the potential Hall of Fame player. If you don't think and you disagree with all the other scouts that he's a consensus number one best prospect in this draft, you get it too. It's another if you think that you're going to trade down as you need 18 positions to be filled is a terrible way to run this franchise. And to go about the wishing things, I'll wish the coach. I was thinking about this the other day. I want your thought on this. I was really against Belichick surrounding himself with his inner circle, especially bringing his kids in here. But now I see the story unfolding, and I realize that the mutiny that this ownership created by not having a coaching search and having the Aaron Perrin, and you hear the reports of Mayo walking around the building telling people this. I don't blame him for insulating himself with his people. And think about trying to just protect yourself at that point instead of what's best for the franchise. That the infighting between the ownership and Belichick and his staff, I guess, is really what's got us here. And if they don't move on from Mayo, which they won't, because I will be admitting that they made a mistake, and they can't let him. This is the other thing. One other thing, John. Brady leaving and winning a Super Bowl, first of all, sacrilege to ever let that guy walk out the door for anything other than he said he's not coming back. They can't let Belichick do the same thing. So don't tell me he wasn't on the phone with all the other owners in this league saying Belichick cannot take another job here and win a Super Bowl, because the look for the crafts would have been unescapable. So they blackballed him, sabotaged him. UNC, the best coach at all time, can't get a job. The ownership, like Parcells said, was a meddling, let me shop for the groceries, cook the dinner type stuff. It's awful, man. They got money to spend. You draft the best player available. And Merry Christmas, boys. I love you.
Appreciate it, Ryan. Thanks so much for the call,
man. Thank you, Ryan. Merry Christmas to you as well.
So here's what I would say. I don't think Travis Hunter is the best player available. I don't. I don't believe it. I watch him at Colorado. Again, I stipulate this because he played at Colorado. If he did this at Georgia or Alabama or LSU or something like that, I would maybe buy into it a little bit more, but I don't think he's the best prospect on his own football team. Like, to me, Shedeur Sanders is a much better prospect than Travis Hunter in the NFL.
As a starting cornerback, he had 92 receptions for 1,152 yards and 14 touchdowns. What a stiff.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying he's a stiff, but like, again, Fitzy, he did it at Colorado. A lot of it was stat padding for Dion. Like, I mean, they were force feeding him the ball with 2 minutes left in a game. They were up like 40. Like, I mean, come on. It's
then who is the best receiver in this draft?
Tet McMillan. I don't even think it's close. He's the best receiver in the draft.
Here's the problem, Shime. The Patriots cannot afford to do anything but take the safest stud prospect. Like, they need almost like the lowest, like a high floor blue chip, because they cannot blow this pick.
Yeah, I agree. Like,
if you think it's Kelvin Banks or if it's Will Campbell, even if there may be better receivers and you know you need a dynamic wide receiver one, I'd rather they overpay for a fleet of receivers and free agency, test them out and see who works.
Because at least with receiver, like, you can pay for known commodities. And I think they should do that. Whereas the offensive line market this year, I think, stinks. I think the pick for the Patriots should probably be Kelvin Banks. I need to do more tape grinding on the offensive lineman. I haven't done a ton.
Someone
but as
just
right
mentioned
now,
him in our socials, Shime, at AeroDude73. 6'4", 320. He'll only be 21 come draft day. Are you guys
some of the other longer tackles and really kind of get in on the tape a little bit? But like, look, I understand. My Travis Hunter opinion is not popular. I do a show every Sunday with Arcand, who's the biggest Colorado fan I know. I understand. I'm well aware. But at the same time, I have never been afraid of going out on a limb when it comes to draft picks. I have had some success. I've had some misses, right? Like, that's what's going to happen because this is not an exact science. For me, Travis Hunter could be a really good cornerback, but I don't think he's an NFL wide receiver. I just don't. At most, he's like an NFL 2, maybe. Mm-hmm. I think he could be a good corner, but I don't think he's like a Hall of Fame.
You don't draft him to be wide receiver 1. No.
No, you don't. And that's the thing. The Patriots don't need a corner. Like, Christian Gonzalez is great. Jonathan Jones is pretty good. He's not going anywhere. Like, you have so many other needs. I would rather take a blue chip player at receiver in like Tet McMillan or take a blue chip player at tackle.
I don't think he's a guaranteed re-sign.
Yeah,
he's played
back
really well. Like,
he played
excellent
great
against
this
Shakir
year.
Sunday.
Yeah, he was awesome, and I think he'll be back next year. I mean, Marcus Jones should hopefully get healthy. He should be better for next year as well. I think you have so many more needs than cornerback right now, especially because you have your number one corner. You have him. And again, right, corners are much more available on the free agent market than offensive linemen and stuff. To me, like, trading from 2 to 6 and taking best available offensive lineman, blue chip offensive lineman, is slam dunk. Slam dunk.
All right, let me just, because I know we're, as they like to say in the biz, we're up against it. But
sure.
My wish, my Christmas wish for the New England Patriots over their final two games, let me see if Cole Strange can play center and let me see if Caden Wallace can go out to right tackle and hold his ground. If they can even play serviceably, let alone at a starter caliber level over the final two games in the face of a couple of really good pass rushes from teams that are trying to make the playoffs, that may address or speak to some of your significant offseason needs, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, that may be true. I don't need to see Cole Strange at center. I don't. I've seen enough from Ben Brown. Like, I will bring Ben Brown back next year. He's had
you would?
He's had like one bad game. He's been the best offensive lineman by far, and you picked him up off a practice squad this year. Like, he's been good.
He can play swing guard and backup center for me, but I can't. David
Cole Strange
is a great ball player, but he's been injured so much. I don't know if he's going to be able to come back and play at the level that he used to play at a couple years ago.
Yeah, I don't need David Andrews should retire. I agree, but that's what I'm saying. Like, Ben Brown, I think has been good. I think he's been I don't want to say really good, but he has been the best of what you have, without a doubt. And to me, he's been good enough to be an NFL starting center. Unfortunately, you know, guys like Joe Tooney just don't grow on trees. And to shame you don't have a guy like that in the building anymore, huh?
Like Mankins playing left tackle instead of left guard when the team needs. Oh, man.
All right. 617-779-7937. You want to weigh in on the Pats? You want to rip me for my Travis Hunter take? You want to talk about bar pizza? Whatever you want to do, everything's available here on a Christmas Eve with Fitzy and Shime filling in for the Greg Hill Show. We'll be right back.